broadcasting from the UNMC College of Nursing. Get ready for RN Huddle, the podcast dedicated to bringing hot topics for and by nurses to the table.
Welcome to the podcast for NPIAP and RN Huddle. I'm Joyce Black, and my guest today is Martin Burns. As you know, if you've been following these, I start with what's in my mailbox. This is an interesting what's in my mailbox piece because it actually took multiple communications with this wound nurse to figure out what the best answer was. So here's how it started. I'm actually not going to read you what was in the mailbox. This nurse wrote to me and said that there's no way that she could see all of the patients in her hospitals. She covered many. So she wrote what she called the standards of care for patients with various stages of pressure injuries. And did I think that was a good idea? And so I wrote back and said, let me caution you on the words standards of care, because that's a legal term. And I would advise you to maybe use the word protocol or practice guideline or something like that, because even the NPIAP guideline is not called the NPIAP standards of care. So those of you that are interested in legal issues, you might want to go back to the podcast I did with Katie Cheadle and listen to how detail-oriented lawyers are. So don't call them standards of care. But here's where the story really took quite a left turn. She wrote these documents based on the stage of the pressure injury. Okay, that's fair. But then she said, or actually wrote, I did that because the nurses can't stage pressure injuries in my institution. Well, hang on, we got a big disconnect now, right? If the nurses can't stage pressure injuries, and later she wrote and said that's because they always get them wrong, why would you write a practice guideline that says do this for a stage one or a stage two, et cetera, if the person reading it can't stage the wound? Makes no sense. So my guidance to her at the end was what you need to say is if this non-blanchable erythema, do X. If this is a shallow wound, do Y. Now, I don't know what she did, but if your practice guideline, your policy for the treatment of pressure injuries is based on staging and your staff nurses can't stage, you have a complete disconnect. So please look at how those documents are put together. If you aren't responsible for writing those documents, you need to be. If you can't get the proper staging by your staff, you need some help. And we may be able to get to that in this podcast. So let me turn and introduce to you my guest, Martin Burns. Martin has been a member of the NPIAP for a while now, and we have really come to enjoy him and enjoy and appreciate the talent, the mixed talent that he brings to the NPIAP. We're going to talk about that a little bit as we go through the podcast. So let me give you a chance to hear from this wonderful person before I dig into all that he brings. Martin, would you introduce yourself to the audience?
Joyce, thank you very much for the opportunity to do this. I'm Martin Burns, and I'm the CEO of Bruin Biometrics. And I actually have been since 2012. I know I only look about 27 years old, but actually I'm a little bit older than that. Thank God people can't see this on video. I joined actually from a consulting firm. Let me just be clear up front. I am not a nurse practitioner and I'm not a doctor. My role has been really to sort of pull together a group of the most wonderful academics and researchers from around the world to really craft a research strategy, pull it together and advance it, some of which was sponsored by the company, some of which was done independently, but really advance it to try and actually address the early stages of tissue damage, pressure-induced tissue damage, the measurability of it, and then really try to help inform international clinical practice guidelines.
Martin has been a huge piece of the National Pressure Injury Advisory Panel. And I know that not many of you listening have ever been a part of that panel because it's a fairly small group of people. So let me kind of explain how the panel works. The panel is, 70 or 80 people when all parts are present. Here's how it's organized. There is a board of directors of the panel. That is 15 of us. I'm currently the president of that panel. That board of directors is multidisciplinary. Currently, we have physicians, nurses, researchers, engineers, nutritionists, physical therapists. I don't think we have an occupational therapist right now, but we have had in the past. They are the board of directors, and that interdisciplinary approach has really been a tremendous asset to us. Now, we are supported, so the wind beneath our wings comes from what we call the councils. The councils include a corporate advisory council. That's where Martin comes in. We have a collaborating organization council. So the WOCN, the AORN is part of the collaborating organization council. We have a provider organization council. Right now, the Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins, Harvard are part of that provider organization council. And we have a patient advisory council. So those are the people that kind of keep their feet on the ground for us. Now, many of us at the board of director level still see patients, but we are 15. We don't exist across the United States, and we don't have a sense of what's going on around the world for sure, but our councils do, and they are the ones that bring problems to us and help us kind of see what's going on. Of course, the NPIAP is part of the guideline development process, is part of the standards for creating quality support services, and has a new initiative on looking at prophylactic dressings. So Martin actually chairs that council of our corporate council. So these are the people such as Bruin Biometrics, such as Hillrom, such as Stryker, Mölnlycke, all of those companies send reps to our meeting, and Martin is the coordinator of that group. And that's really what we're here to talk about today. Because I don't know, Martin, if you'd agree with me, we're sort of a unique group in that we invite industry to the table to talk to us about what's going on. And in a nutshell, where do you see industry in the development of the science to prevent pressure injury? I see it as huge. I presume you're going to agree with me, but I want you to explain to the listening audience where industry's been, where industry's going, and how they, as the providers in hospitals across the world, could help with industry to move that science forward.
Joyce, you know, you used the word unique. And I think that that's exactly the right word as it relates to NPIAP. So if you think about clinical practice guidelines groups, clinical groups around the world, it's actually quite rare to have industry be involved at all, because the whole idea is that industry is kept very much at arm's length. What I find really refreshing about NPIAP is that the panel has actually opened up space for industry to participate. And it matters a lot. And it matters a lot because of the reason that you just said. And the reason is very clear that industry is actually doing some of the primary research about the core areas that we focus in on. Now, if you think about our particular focus, Joyce, wound care is probably one of the largest areas of clinical demand. If you look at the overall market of healthcare, it's absolutely massive. So you've got these massive organizations, and you've mentioned some of them, Stryker, Hillrom, Mölnlycke, you can say it much better than I can, Johnson & Johnson. You know, these are huge organizations that employ hundreds of thousands of people around the world, and they earn a lot of revenue out of this particular space. So it's quite unique that NPIAP does this. Now, you asked about the role of industry, particularly in research. And I would break it down in a number of discrete categories. In our case, we have been contributing an enormous amount over the last 12 years to etiology and pathophysiology. But I will also tell you that that's historical, but now all of that's been established. Now you're going to move over to where we're going to in the future, machine learning, artificial intelligence, and all of those incredible techniques, mathematical techniques, to be able to really increase our diagnostic capability and accuracy, our predictive accuracy, workflow management, so stepping up and out of the bedside into the overall clinical practice management. And industry is the group that's really either driving it or is collaborating with academics and with practitioners to really advance it. I'll say one other thing on the etiology as it relates specifically to us, because we've been driving this research now for about 12 years. There hasn't been an enormous amount of outside of the laboratory, bedside, clinical research about what's actually happening underneath the skin surface for skin and tissue that's being assaulted by deformation. And the reason for that is because it's been remarkably difficult to actually do that research. But now we have technology that allows us to do that research. And we, again, very collaboratively, we've collaborated with over 100 academics around the world, people that you know as personal friends from all over the world, to really understand what was done all the way back to Kosiak in the 1950s, Dan Bader, who's now unfortunately passed on, Kees Oemans in the Netherlands, I mean, incredible researchers. Amit Geffen in Tel Aviv, and he's now enjoying too many mushrooms and nice Belgian beer and chocolates in Belgium, but having a great time. But those, and you know, Zena Moore's group in Dublin, I mean, just the most extraordinary researchers looking at what's happening underneath the skin surface microscopically. Now, their research was driven really by an epistemological pathway, a pathway towards truth, which we helped design and we've executed both together and independently. So it's incredibly exciting. I mean, really exciting stuff that we now know more about skin and tissue than we've ever known before. And with AI and ML, it's only getting more and more and more advanced. It's brilliant. What a great era to be involved in pressure injury research.
Yeah, I think that the future is bright and wide open. And I think the marriage of industry and clinicians and researchers couldn't be at a better interface than right now. Because as you say, for a long time, I mean, even at the University of Nebraska, if I wanted to do, and I did a study involving industry, holy moly, I had to almost give up my firstborn to the Institutional Review Board to convince them that I wasn't paid under the table by industry to find what industry wanted. In fact, industry, the company, and I'm not going to name them, they were very reputable, really just wanted to help me find the information. And in the end, yes, they got what they wanted. It wasn't magnificent information, but they were very satisfied with what I found out. But there was this fear of being manipulated by industry, by my institution. The clinicians were perfectly happy to help me as the researcher. I think some of that has gone away. Now, maybe because the universities are looking for ways to get more funding to keep their research arms going. But industry has also recognized that they serve a very, very important role, and they're no longer in the shadow of getting the science started. And NPIAP, I think, is very unique in that way, that when we meet in person, those researchers, those folks that serve on the industry panel, our council, are there, and they can talk to us, and they can find out really what we're thinking. I mean, that's what NPIAP is, at least the board of directors, is a think tank of what's going on. And the industry members take that back and dwell on it for a while and often come back to us with research ideas. So yeah, I think it's a neat place to be. I think we are in a good place. I encourage those who are listening to work with their industry partners and see if they can get their hospitals to join in that effort. It's a good effort. It's a solid effort. They shouldn't walk away from it. And I don't think there should be an assumption that industry partnerships are invalid. I think that fear should be let go. And it was around for a long time. I can remember 10, 15 years ago, where it was looked at with quite a bit of disdain. And I think that's gone. At least I hope that's gone. Yeah, I really do.
You know, in the world of orthopedics, which we also spend time in, that concern was really alleviated about 20 to 25 years ago. Wound care is now catching up in terms of practices and protocols and approaches and really methods to be able to address what really is the elephant in the room here. And the elephant in the room is all around independence. So when you're developing science, of course, what you want is repeatability and observability gathered in a way that overcomes bias. And bias is very easy to get into research, either deliberately or by accident. So we've got all these structures now, which have been developed over the years to try and avoid bias. Now, it's worthwhile noting that you were talking about the challenges you had with your IRB. On the industry side, we're also regulated by the Food and Drug Administration and in Europe by the European body, which we have to then provide notification through our notify body. We had the FDA turn up on our doorstep and do what are referred to as an unnotified audit. So basically they turn up with their gold badges and they audited all 3 million lines of our data without previously giving us notification. We had to go through IRB approvals all over the world to get our research done. But the consequences on me personally as the study sponsor, I could hear the FDA auditor saying, "You do realize you can go to jail if you've defrauded the FDA, don't you?" So for me as an industry research partner, I have to go through IRB for sure, but I also have a federal felony liability if I do something that's fraudulent. So, but believe me, I told you I was 27 years old at the beginning. I'm joking, obviously, I'm not 27, but my gray and silver hair is partly as of account of the standard that we have to reach as an industry group is high.
I think we take patient safety very seriously. I think in the US, we take it very seriously and sometimes perhaps to the patient's detriment because there are drugs and treatments outside the US that have been proven to be beneficial, particularly in Europe. And we can't get them here because our FDA won't approve them. So the fact that you're not in black and white stripes or an orange suit behind black bars tells me that you passed that. Oh my gosh, I'd have been, my heart rate would have been 150 and my blood pressure would have been through the roof. The fact that you passed that level of inspection tells me that your company is very forthright. I mean, I knew that all along. I wouldn't have asked you to do this session if that was not true. But I know your product, I know your reputation is very solid and your work is very solid, but congratulations on passing such a high
standard. We listen really closely to you and your peers. And actually one of your peers, Lizette Schoonhoven, years ago said to me at a EPOAP conference, she said, "You know, I've got one request of you. Publish absolutely every single piece of your data. Publish it all." Now, look, we didn't know where that research was going to end up. And it's a terrifying thing to spend money on research and then you don't know where the cards are going to land. And Lizette was saying, no, you've got to publish the whole lot because you've got an obligation to the science, you've got an obligation to patient safety. So we did. It was utterly terrifying. But she's right. It was the right way to do it. And as an industry partner, we have an obligation to be able to say, you know what? Towards patient safety, towards bettering the science, you've got to do it. So that's what we did.
That's excellent. You can't be, the truth is not something to be afraid of, right? The truth is the truth. The facts are the facts.
And let the cards fall where they may.
Yes, exactly. Well, we're going to wrap this session up with Martin Burns. Martin, there's many other companies that sit on the council that you chair. They all offer something to the clinician for the prevention of pressure injuries. What advice would you give to the clinicians when they're dealing with these reps that are coming to their hospitals, selling their wares, if you would? What advice would you give to those wound nurses listening to the stories that these reps come and tell them? Obviously, the reps are trying to sell their wares. We all have to earn a living. How would you advise these nurses to discriminate between two products that seem to do the same thing? Is it simply money? How can they get, you said, publish everything. Not every company does that. So how can these nurses get to the bottom or get to the truth about the safety profile or the efficacy of those products?
So the first thing I would say to anybody who's receiving a sales call from a rep is, don't be afraid of it. You're going to be sold to. And in actual fact, it's a very lovely thing in some ways that somebody turns up at your doorstep, travels from wherever they're traveling from to visit you and put the time in to prepare to do the presentation. So my first comment is, don't be afraid of it. You are going to be sold to. Know what's going to happen. Somebody's going to turn up and try and get you to buy something. Okay. With that said, the second thing is, I've been around the members of MPIAP and I've been around the members of EPUAP, and you lot are incredibly smart. And trying to be able to get something past you is a non-starter. So there's a meter that says, okay, that guy's trying to sell me something that I don't believe in. And you'll be able to tell very quickly. In other words, trust in your own abilities. Now, practically speaking, there are a number of great independent sources that roll up the data that's being presented to you. And obviously, the International Clinical Practice Guidelines is one of those places. That's why we as Bruin Biometrics support it so much, because we love that approach. It's a synthesis of all of the last 5 years' worth of research rolled up. There it is. The trouble with it is it's every 5 years. So you've got to be able to keep up. Clearly, going to the conferences matters a great deal because you can hear the contemporaneous presentation of the science. That matters a lot. But the other one which I look at, there are two sources I look at really specifically. One is the FDA website that then says this product is authorized for this particular use, and here's the science. It's all public, and you can just Google it, and it comes up, and right there you have the letter and all the science. That's the first source. The other source that I look to are systematic reviews and meta-analyses. Now, led by some of your peers, you know, Janet Cadogan, then in Europe by, you know, Jan Kottner, by Jane Nixon, by Zena Moore. I mean, these people are meta-analysis gurus, and they spend so much time rolling it all up. Look at the meta-analysis, look at the systematic reviews. Those are your friends.
Martin, that was excellent advice. Everyone I speak to says, help me. I've been hit by XYZ company. Should I trust them? Part of me says, use your gut. The other part of me says, find the data. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Martin Burns, for spending some time with me to do this podcast. Very few clinicians get to hear your side of the story. And your side of the story, being a manufacturer, is very, very important. I think we at NPIAP have appreciated that for years. I appreciate you taking your time with me today. Thank you, Courtney Smith, as the executive director of all of this work. Thank you to RN Huddle at the University of Nebraska for posting these. They are obviously, as you found it today, posted on the NPIAP website. I'll see you next time on the NPIAP website and RN Huddle. Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to RN Huddle. To stay connected, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UNMCCNE or check out unmc.edu/CNE for more program information.